This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude, Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome back to Postcard from Pop Rap with me, Eric Wiltshire, Lee G. Banks, and Mark Gander, co-founder of the Consumer Action Group. As promised before the break, it's the misery of the home loan con.
It's
disgusting, Lee.
It's one of the biggest cons ever perpetrated on the world, isn't it? I tell you, I am the victim of this con. I have a what's it loan, an interest only loan on my house, and my mortgage is finished in I don't know what exactly, but say 5 or 6 years, and at the end of the day, my endowment will leave me £25,000 short of the actual amount it was supposed to cover. Not only was it supposed to cover the amount of my mortgage, it was also supposed to be an investment that would give me another £20,000 or £30,000 on top of it. But the biggest con of all is this, that some years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, my building society wrote to me admitting that I was going to have a shortfall. And what they did, they gave me £5,000. And I had to then agree never to chase them up again over this. They conned me at the beginning, they conned me in the middle, and they're going to rip me off at the end.
What happens if you pay it off early?
Well, that's all right. In fact, in my circumstances, that's, you know, it really isn't a major problem for me. But I and my endowment policy will be seen as a savings account, a very low savings account.
No, I didn't mean it in that context, Lee.
You're not very well endowed, really, are you?
No, he's not. All I'm saying is, if somebody's come on, guys, I'm in a top tip mode. If somebody's got that problem, and rather than get the shortfall out of the back end of it, and they went to another building society and say, look, I've got this problem.
I could answer this for you, yeah.
Go on then.
Well, yeah, if you go and because I actually looked into it. I looked into remortgaging to avoid this problem. Like I say, in my case, it doesn't actually matter. But when it did look like it might matter, I went to see if what would happen. And yeah, I could remortgage, but the cost of my mortgage would go up so vastly it would have crippled me. So what people are actually doing now is hoping upon hope that things will change. But what the reality of the situation is that a lot of people in their mid-60s, 60s to 70s, are actually now having at that age to sell the homes that they've been paying for all their lives to pay off the shortfall created by this massive, massive con that was perpetrated on this country back in the 80s.
Mark, do you know anything about this?
Well, I mean, only I think that I think people have known for a long time, actually, that these interest-only loans have been very attractive to people because, you know, it seemed a way of paying a reduced amount of money in the hope that an insurance policy would mature. Yeah. And I think that for a long time, people have started to realise that there's a real risk. And, of course, this economic downturn has really shown that the insurance policies just aren't doing as well as they should have done. And they're just not there enough to meet the full commitments.
It's,
I'm very pleased, actually. I've always avoided interest-only mortgages.
But what do you think to that, Mark, that 5 years ago, the building societies went round and paid as many people as they could?
Do we know that's every building society or just yours?
Well, all the building societies did it. They because everybody was taking them to the ombudsman over it. I took mine to the ombudsman over it, and they had ultimately to admit it. Right, and the best way to do it for them was rather than go it was rather than be taken to court and be screwed left, right, and centre and have massive litigation going on for decades. They got in touch with people and paid them off, but only paid them off a small amount. My mortgage will have a shortfall of £25,000. They gave me £5,000 towards it.
Why did you accept it?
Oh, because ultimately I knew that it really wouldn't. I knew that ultimately I wasn't going to actually fall
into. Yeah, okay, I got it. So, hang on. But my point, I think what Mark was saying, Lee, and my point precisely as well, if you've got a deficit of £20,000 on your mortgage, why on earth did you accept five?
Because, personally, because it was beneficial for me to do that. But the other thing is that most people will accept it because it's £5,000 coming out of the blue. And if you're desperate and you're not sure what's going to happen, £5,000 in the bank is better than rather taking a chance on taking your building society to court.
Okay.
It also
I think that's what the building society's bank on. I mean, you know,
that's what I'm saying. That's often exactly the point.
They try to offer you money, you know, in the hope that you'll just want to grab it.
You'll shut up and go away. Yeah, absolutely. That's the point.
Well, anyway, let's move on, boys and girls. I think that's another one for the Consumer Action Group in the future as well. Microsoft goes one over the eight as the chief of Microsoft explains that there's going to be more devices coming out from the operating software company, as we know them, in the form of all sorts of techie boxes coming up. And I have to say, I'm surprised they've taken this long.
I don't know much about these subjects, as people realise. But from what little I've been reading about it and understanding, this actually is a very good move. It might be a little bit late, but it's a very good move.
Well, OK, we'll put it into Lee speak.
Thank you.
Right, we have probably the biggest ones, and the anoraks are all going to wake me and go, Linux, and I'm going to go, shut up. There's Microsoft, there's Apple, and there's Mr. Google.
Yeah.
If you look at Mr. Google and Mr. Apple, they've already got phones and they've got tablets.
You know what you said? You put it in Lee terms. Why are you putting it in Lee terms like I'm 5 years old?
Because
it's like about Mr. Apple and Mr. Google.
That's about your level in technology, although you are much better. So you've got the main two competitors of Microsoft with a whole bunch of boxes that work on their operating systems or platforms.
Yes.
Microsoft have been a long way behind that, and it's quite funny to see them. They actually call tablets slates.
That's nice. That's traditional. That's a traditional term. I think that's really well done, Microsoft.
Oh my god!
Mm. Oh, you try scratching on that with a piece of stone. Wonderful.
So I think Steve Ballmer's actually right in that, you know, if you've got. And I think the partnership with Nokia, I've said this for so many times, is a great partnership because, you know, they've got Windows 8 on a phone. They've got the bloke at the top of Nokia who's an ex-Microsoft bloke anyway, who knows Steve Ballmer and used to work with Steve Ballmer. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect combination. And other things like, you know, I don't understand why they haven't bought out laptops and tablet slates, call on what you will before.
Yeah.
I think what you say is absolutely right. And ladies and gentlemen, may I say, as the person who understands nothing about technology,
the Luddite,
wasn't I right when I said that at the beginning?
The Luddite of technology. And of course, this all comes in the week when Windows 8 has been launched. And have I been buried under questions from work about it? Yes. Marvellous.
Yeah.
unbelievable. And I'm very lucky and very spoilt, ladies and gentlemen, to have actually had my hands on a Windows 8 slate, as they're called, and other Windows 8 devices. Thank you, Andrew, for letting me see them. And it's nice. It's nice.
Nice.
It's nice. And I have to be honest and say that whilst it's very, very nice, if your computer's doing what you want today and you're not struggling for it to do anything else, why bother changing yet right now?
Yeah.
Simple as that.
That sounds another top tip.
Thank blimey. That's hard to say as well, don't forget. Now, I'm not going to get his name right because I was practising this in the office, as Lee will know, and I get it all wrong. So, Lee, what's this gentleman's name?
Well, he is the man who's really got top tips, hasn't he?
Very good. His name is...
Yeah, John McCrick.
John McCrick.
I can't say it. Oh, John McCrick.
Yeah. He, ladies and gentlemen from around the world, he has been the sort of main commentator for horse racing on the UK channel, Channel 4, for such a long time. He's a pundit. He's like the guys that you have at the Super Bowl in the US or on the WWE wrestling or something like that, and he talks about it. John is now 72 years old. He talks in what is known as tic-tac, which is where the bookies move their hands around their heads and their shoulders to actually share the betting odds between themselves and the public are not supposed to know. Anyway, John has been replaced by Claire Balding, the former BBC girl and also a jockey herself. And John is claiming that at 72 years young, he's been sacked and it's ageist. John.
I think he's right. I don't like Mr. McCririck. I think he's quite obnoxious in the character that he portrays.
Yeah,
he's,
but that's what sells him as the character. I mean, he's a real personality.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I have to say that, you know, anybody who's listening to this in the States, they won't know who he is. Cool. Do yourselves all a favour. Go onto YouTube, because I'm sure there's loads and loads of stuff you can see. John McCririck, you'll think he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's the typical eccentric Englishman.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't personally like the character that he portrays.
I think he's a bit obnoxious.
But, yeah. However, what I was going to say is that he is one of the last in a long line of British eccentrics. And I think it's quite sad that Channel 4 are severing him when he had a lot, when he's still got a lot of life left in him. And yeah, they are replacing him with Claire Balding, who is quite a nice young lady, or middle-aged lady, may I say. But she's quite bland and inoffensive and doesn't have the edge that McCririck has, and she could never be classed as an eccentric. Mm. Horse racing is an eccentric sport, and he was an eccentric within it.
Let me give you a typical television presentation of John McCririck. I nearly got it right then. He was on Celebrity Big Brother.
Which
you will probably find this clip somewhere on YouTube. Because John was sitting there one night and he's picking his nose on the telly.
Absolutely.
He's picking his nose on the telly. He then rolls it in his fingers and he eats it.
And that is, I rest my case on saying why I do not like John McCririck and the character he plays.
Exactly.
But I defend his right to be an eccentric.
CFAX is no longer seen with fax.
what a good headline.
That wasn't bad, was it? That. I will say nothing, but I'll take your compliments. Thank you very much. It's completed its final broadcast, if you can call it that, after 38 years of being on air. And it's the teletext service, which in France was called something completely different in the early days. And I can't remember what it was called. But it's the thing that you put on your telly, you push the button, and it had news stories on it. And the BBC were the front runners of this across, well, everywhere. Then it went over to satellite channels like Super Channel in 1988, and then to channels like UK Gold when some idiot let Eric Wiltshire be an editor of loads of pages of it. And it was a journalistic art, to be quite honest, because if you picture this, boys and girls, you had across the screen 38 keystrokes, as it was called, or characters, and that included spaces and full stops. Everything counted as a character. You had 16 lines down. I'm talking commercial television. The BBC had 18 lines. And you had to fit a whole story onto this one page.
Absolutely. May I say, ladies and gentlemen, that was a very grand art. It was more difficult for the newspaper editors, who only had four words, and each space in between the words counted as a half a character.
And it's really weird. And what I don't understand is that CFAX actually got an award for clarity and use of everyday words.
That's a plain English campaign, wasn't
it? Yeah, well, they're a complete bunch of planks as well. Because because part of the training we used, well, not training, but what you learnt very quickly, is you never use the word however, because it was too long, and you use but.
Yeah.
And you would often start a sentence with and, which is grammatically incorrect, to squeeze all this stuff in. And you would use bad grammar almost to make the story fit, because you had no choice.
I think what the plain English campaign was saying, because basically the rules you've just said are the basic rules of newspaper journalism, and what they were saying is that even though it would broke all the rules of scholarly English, it offered clarity and the use of everyday short words, and it took a lot of the pomposity out of writing.
True.
But once again, I think this is another eccentricity of Britain which has just been lost.
It's on the internet now.
Same
journalist, more space. Same journalist, more space. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I have to enter a little comment, which is, if you're slightly squeamish, I would suggest you tune away now or get ready for the word which goes along the lines of ew.
And ladies and gentlemen, may I say, I told him not to use this story.
Well, it's a pretty disgusting story, and it's shocking, shocking, shocking.
And I can't believe it's been allowed to happen, is my point, where York policeman has been arrested for an alleged plot to kidnap women, rape and torture them, and then cook and eat their body parts. Who on earth in the New York police couldn't see that a police officer was kind of like going off the rails? And furthermore, surely when they do all these tests to see if you're medically stable, they haven't sort of tumbled that he's a couple of crumbs short of the picnic.
Well, that's right. But in fact, if you know, he hasn't actually done it, has he?
Well, he hasn't actually done it, but his wife's reported him for writing it all down as if he's doing it.
Well, apparently, his preparations were so far advanced that they decided to arrest him, although they were on his case for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I have to say that it really is a disgusting story. And I had a look at some of the reports of the messages that he was sending to his co-conspirators, because there were a number of other people. And I'm not going to repeat what he was saying, but it is just shocking and disgusting.
Gentlemen, I'm going to move around a little bit because we are getting running short of time already. And on our running order, page 6, there's a story which has just really horrified me. And I will tell you why in a minute. And it's all about trainee teachers who are going to be forced to take a tougher examination, allegedly. And I will read to you a little comment from the gentleman who's in charge of the teaching agency, the chief executive, Charlie Taylor, who says this is what parents expect and children deserve. And what he's talking about is getting the top graduates into teaching. So this is the concept. If you're a history teacher, unless you're proficient to a certain level in maths or English, you can't teach history. If it is that you are great at geography or one of the sciences, or you could be a tremendous written word journalist in the making, if you can't do maths, you can't coach youngsters in those skills. And I find that totally and utterly appalling. And I also find it very discriminative because, as many people will know, I am dyslexic. So Richard Branson's dyslexic. There's many other geniuses through the years that have been dyslexic. And what they're saying is they're not good enough to be teachers.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that they would necessarily be excluded from that at all. And I don't think we're necessarily talking about a sort of very high standard. But I must say that, you know, I would prefer that my children were taught by professional staff who had a good general standard of education.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that means, you know, be fairly in control of maths and fairly in control of literature.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, be exceptionally good at their particular area of interest, for instance, history. And
I'm not arguing the point, Mark, but I'm saying school is a place to get you ready for employment.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got one of the brilliant business minds, and let's use Sir Richard because he's quite public about the fact he's dyslexic. He would not pass this entry examination. He is a great businessman who can coach people on business acumen, and yet he couldn't do it because he can't do words proper.
Mm. Well, yeah, but I can see the point you're making, and I think it has a certain valid element to it. But really, somebody like Richard Branson with his way of his problems would certainly be able to go and teach his kind of eruditeness in different areas, in different kinds of skills. Basically, what we're talking about here is a tougher test to make sure that the English teaching system toughens up on teachers who are just a complete waste of space.
Mm. Or it could be the jack of all trade, master of none.
Well, no, he said it's like Marshall McLuhan said in the 60s, that if a child fails to learn, The teacher will always blame the child.
Correct.
Whereas, actually, the teacher is the one to blame. Mm. And that is finally looks as if there is a chance now that somebody with some intelligence is saying, let's make the teachers stand up and be counted. And I think it's a good
thing. I'd agree with that. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I completely agree. Completely
we've all agreed. The big issue in the north of England has gone digital. And I don't see the point.
What's gone digital? I wasn't listening to you.
The big issue.
Oh, the big issue.
A big issue. No, how many people who live on the streets have got computers?
Mm. No.
They're selling vouchers. It's not that.
The first thing is, what is the big issue for people who aren't here? Big issue is a newspaper which is distributed by people who are unemployed, and I'm not quite sure what the deal is, but there's the big issue, generally speaking, contains articles and information relating to unemployment, difficulty getting jobs, homelessness, and this sort of thing. Mm. And these people who might otherwise have absolutely no way of getting any income are allowed to sell this on the streets, these newspapers, and I think the money they get doesn't affect their benefits either.
Can I explain what the big issue about? The big issue is actually quite a clever and well produced glossy magazine, which is produced by the Big Issue company, and I've forgotten the name of the editor of it now. Mm. And what actually happens is that the people who sell it on the streets go and buy it. Wholesale prices and set themselves up in a business, then they can then move on from there and set themselves up. My facetious remark was that what's actually happening now? How are they going to sell it if it's digital on the streets?
They sell vouchers, Lee.
Yeah,
sell vouchers. That's fine. It's like you say, what a ludicrous thing to do.
Mm,
it's not the kind of thing that if you're going to sell it on the streets, that really you're going to be able to sell. Or you sell properly.
No,
if it produces more custom, I mean, if people are prepared to buy it and provide more money for this, then it can't be a bad thing. I can't see how it's going to reduce sales. I mean, they're still selling the paper edition, but also, if you want, they'll sell you a voucher. Presumably, the voucher's got some keyword, some
it's
password
got a code on it
to allow you access a particular. Yeah. I can't see any problem about it.
What we can do, gentlemen, is see what happens. We'll keep an eye on it. In a couple of months' time, we'll review it, won't we? That's the easy way. Microsoft has been hit by the EU planks with a formal warning on browser choice. In which case, Mr. EU, why don't you tell everybody that buys a new car there's 29 different petrol stations to get petrol from, all with different company names on them? The EU has always had a fight with Microsoft about their Internet Explorer browser because it's fitted with the operating system when it comes on. There was a bit of a technical glitch because what they agreed to do was when you got a new computer, you turn it on, it comes up and says, hello, this is the choice of browsers that you can have. Which one do you want? The people that are doing that have no idea, Mr. EU, what you're talking about. Because if
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No. And the fact is, and I'll ruin the whole thing now. Sorry, Andrew. because I prefer Pale Moon.
That's what you make me use, and I've never understood that either.
and Mark's going, what? because I prefer the internet browser Pale Moon on my computer.
Why? Because, tell me why.
Because it works more efficiently. It uses less of the internal guts of the computer.
Mm. Oh, right.
It's not RAM hungry. But by the same token, because of the day job that I have Opera, I have Firefox, I have Internet Explorer, I have World Browser, I have all sorts. And the trouble is, when this little screen comes up, the people that are probably the ones the EU are trying to get hold of have no idea, Mr. EU, what you're talking about. So the whole thing is ruddy pointless.
So make things that I can understand.
Correct.
Then the rest of the world will understand. And that's quite a top tip.
Absolutely.
If
absolutely.
If they make something that I can understand, then loads more people will understand it. And your business will grow.
Right, I agree. I'm Scottish, but I can't vote in...
Are you Scottish, really?
Partially, yes, because my grandmother was Scottish. I'm Scottish, but I can't vote, though Brits can. There's 5 million people in Scotland. Those of voting age can have their say in the independence referendum coming up in Scotland. However, 800,000 Scots reside in the UK. They can't vote. But if Lee was to go and buy a house in Edinburgh, he still remains British, English, and yet when the referendum comes up, he can vote. So what Salmon's saying is, as long as you live in Scotland, you can be any nationality you like, and you can vote on the independence referendum for Scotland, whereas a genuinely Scottish person cannot vote, even though they might have had to go down to Carlisle, just across the border, to get a job because there's no jobs in Scotland for their particular trade. And I think that's flipping wrong.
I think it's flipping right.
Hmm. Mark?
I'm not sure.
You've got the casting vote, Mark.
I don't know which way to jump on this. It's just so complicated.
should I tell you why I think it's right, then?
Go on, then.
Yeah.
It's just dead simple to me, right? If 800,000 Scots have moved out of Scotland and are now living in England, they don't particularly want... They're not in a position to live in an independent state. Mm. They're not interested in that because they've left the country. If I go and live in Scotland and I choose to want to live there, I then have a reason to decide whether I want to live in an independent state or not.
Mm. Okay.
Simple.
I think. Can I say that if Scotland really wants to become an independent country, which it says it does, then I think it's got to apply the normal rules for postal voting and all these kind of things, and non-resident voting of its citizens that every other country does. And frankly, I rather see this as a cynical ploy. I've got a feeling that they're taking a gamble that people who've decided not to live in Scotland are really maybe less wedded to the idea of an independent Scotland, so they'd rather they didn't exercise their vote.
Thank you.
At the end of the day, I think you've got to look at this along the sort of normal lines of, I don't know if there's some international law on this, about who can vote where. And I think that if you've got people who, if it was independent, I mean, I think that's the question. If Scotland suddenly became independent, then how are they going to decide the citizenship of all the people who are currently living outside Scotland? Anybody who, in an independent Scotland, would become a Scottish national, I think they have to be given the right to vote right now. And I think Salmon is frit.
Yes, I think so too. And to partly answer your question, Mark, I can vote in the British election if I wish to choose to do so. Equally, a Slovak can vote in the Slovak elections if they choose to do so. They don't have to, but they can do because they are still part of that country. That's their mother country, as it were. And I think the term is mother country that fits it beautifully well across Europe. And as you know, Mark, you're in Paris, but you can still vote if you wish to. And it's as simple as that. So I think Mr. Salmon's playing jiggery poker here.
Well, absolutely.
I think
he's disenfranchising a huge number of Scottish people who, you know, and I think it's completely outrageous.
I think there is the simple fact that they disenfranchise themselves in the first place by getting out of the country.
Well, does that mean then that if Scotland becomes independent, he's going to say to them, no, you are out at the time we voted, therefore you're Brits and you're not Scots anymore.
You can't come back. Or as the famous saying goes, gentlemen, you can take the Englishman out of England, but you can't take England out of the Englishman. That's the end of part two, a postcard from PopRef for another week. We'll see you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.
The Station of the Stars. RTI.